How long gone?
How long gone is here? Double how long gone? That's how excited we are. We've been edging and gooning Cali content for the last 2.5 weeks or so since I've been gone. I've been in 4 countries in the last couple of weeks. I feel like Diplo. I feel like 48 hours of Diplo. None of it was private.
I was about to say,
only one first class flight, two first class flights.
Might feel like Diplo, but you ain't Diplo. Yeah, it feels so good. I almost kissed the ground at JFK yesterday to be back in Manhattan. I went straight for a integral iced coffee and got jacked the fuck up. Mm-hmm. I got a haircut. I got a pedicure. I dropped off my laundry. I picked up all my mail. I was flying high on that kind of the adrenaline you get when you touch back down in the USA.
Yeah. Like the feeling of riding an electric bike, you know what I mean? Wind through your hair, not a care
exactly.
in the world.
It's just a truly electric feeling. I went back to Equinox this morning. No one even asked where I'd been, which was kind of crazy, but whatever.
I have not been back to Equinox yet because I got in last night. Went to bed at like 7 p.m. and woke up about 2:30 a.m. So yeah. I'm on a little bit of more of a funky little schedule right now, but I think I'll be okay once I have a full normal day. And I had a sauna this morning. I had a girl shower. I feel amazing. I did a Bella Hadid Lyme disease facial dump in the ice plunge.
Okay, so just to be clear,
I'm proper sorted.
You're not rich enough to have Lyme disease, so you're just make sure people know you're making a joke because I can't afford
limes. I can only afford one lime.
I can only afford Olipop lemon lime. Actually, is kind of where I'm at. but thank God. I'm going to get my friend Raquel opened a new facial studio and I'm going tomorrow to get a full workup.
My friend Raquel opened a new facial studio.
That's right. She went out on her own. Yeah, she broke out on her own. So I'm excited to see it. And I'm also excited to, I mean, that much traveling, you just look worse for the wear. I wasn't getting, I wasn't sleeping enough. I need to get back to myself. Hopefully her magic hands can do that.
I got some good margin. Shout out to the margin family. I got a whole new pack of products. But honestly, like the sauna into the facial cold plunge, into the full extended release shower, hot and cold. Oh my God. Like
that's all you need.
I need to do that like 11 more times.
Yeah.
And then I'll feel a little bit normal but we go back out on the airplane sooner than later.
Yeah, it's a how long gone summer.
I'm doing a cool thing where I go to New York for one day. I've never gone to New York for one day.
Get your money up, bitch. Welcome to the good life. I used to come to New York for a day all the time.
Well, I'm not to buy drugs, though. I mean, this is for work.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't want to get into that reasoning. But before we go any further, we need to talk about some breaking news that I'm sure you've seen as a big fan. But popular country music artist Morgan Wallen, heartthrob, he kind of surprised his fans and shaved his head.
Mm-hmm.
So he had kind of luscious mullet locks that looked great under the cowboy hat, as you can imagine.
Sure.
And he shaved it without warning, and I don't think the fans are very happy because as a person who shaves their head and as someone who didn't know what was hiding underneath the hood, I was fortunate enough to have a decent shaped peanut head. You know, it's okay.
Yeah.
There's no weird dents or divots. And maybe I'm just used to Morgan's luscious locks, but he looks absolutely insane with the shaved head.
Yeah,
I feel like it could fuck up his career worse than getting caught saying the N-word, to be honest.
You know, he's a toxic cutie, and this is guilty behavior. If somebody has done something wrong in the public eye, it usually happens, you know, like a week after they do it, not like a year and a half. But
well, I was.
It feels like sort of a cleansing, repenting for the sins. I'm a new person. I'm transformed. Or maybe he was just doing a Jada Pinkett Smith and he loves Tupac so much that he shaved his head. Yeah.
Well, it's also
unison.
Possible.
You know, from one musical genius to another, I don't know.
It's also possible, though, that he was getting drug tested and they were going to do it through his hair. So he shaved it. You know, that's a popular move for the criminals out there. But he's too rich to get drug tested.
That's very possible.
I think he's too rich to get drug tested.
Yeah, what's he going to get drug tested for? I feel like he's making too much money for people. He should not be allowed to bick his head like this. without getting the proper approval. I'm sure there has to be some type of CGI, like x-ray scanning of the skull pattern that the record label has to sign off on before anything can be done to that hair. He's leaving a lot of money on the table. 100%. There's a lot of mouths to feed that are not going to be able to pay rent this week or this month because of his one bad decision.
His selfish choices.
You know what it reminds me of? You know when you talk to a tattoo artist and they're like, you know, there's certain things I just won't do. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
like, mm-hmm. I got it. You know, some 18-year-old kid comes in and they're like, I need that swastika on my forehead. And they're like, bro, I'm not the one. You know, something like that.
I can't do that for you.
Every barber has to sort of be on the same.
Yeah, but they're just like,
some sort of guild, guild might not be the best word right now. But
when you go into your spot in Glendale and ask for cornrows and they're just like, look, bro, no, we can't do that. We won't do that for you.
I'll lose my license.
I see what you mean. Like, they're the last line of defense before a bad decision is made.
Yeah.
But they're in the service industry, so their hands are kind of tied. It's an unfortunate.
And the other tough part, he had the one haircut that you can technically do yourself, even if you are, you know, a couple Bud Lights short of a sixer.
I don't know much about Morgan Wallen, honestly, except that everybody likes his music and like is kind of embarrassed. I mean, obviously, people we know like his music and are a little embarrassed about it. But it seems right up my alley, but I listen to it.
You're the only person I know who likes his music.
No, I don't really like it. I'm a Zach Bryan guy, but it's fine. No, people really like it. I mean, obviously it's hugely popular, but it's also that thing that like has crossed over the way like a hardcore like Turnstile did, mm-hmm. where it's like the New York Times loves Morgan Wallen. Like everybody like wants to kind of intellectualize it.
I heard he's going to play Rolling Loud.
Yeah, I mean, he would play. Yeah, he's definitely. Well, he has a song. I believe he has a song with Lil Durk.
Oh, perfect.
I'm almost positive.
I'm sure he does.
It's fucking wild out here, man. I'm so glad to be back in America. And it's raining here too, but it's different because it's hot and gross outside. And it just makes me feel better to step over human shit every day than it is to be in
it's washing away those croc-sized rats that run rampant through your streets.
Yes, exactly.
Jangling through the hallways of the Muxy Hotel every night.
I was talking to Nathan Pemberton earlier,
uh-huh.
and we were talking about North Florida kind of hardcore, which is a
genre. We're losing listeners. You better be able to pull this around.
So there's a band from Tallahassee that we grew up with. They're called I Have Dreams, and they were kind of this like mythic band. And I was looking up something to send it to Nathan, and I found this YouTube page of this guy named Kaz, who basically does these like 10-minute weird videos of all these insane screamo bands that no one has ever heard of. And I cannot believe that the internet goes even this far. Like, it's stunning to me. Like, he's got 12 episodes up, and I only know one band of 12 episodes. And this guy's spending a lot of time on this.
Okay.
And I just don't know. I don't understand how people do this. Like, is it just dedication to the love of the game? Like, could you ever do something like this just because you were a fan?
Right. Just like the documentarian style.
Yeah, like he's spending hours doing this. And I'm just like, dude.
And
like,
money.
Yeah, these videos have 1,000 views. Like, it's just not, like, there's no audience for this. I am the only audience for this. It's crazy.
I think about this sometimes when I see, like, other people who do podcasts, not necessarily, like, copycat podcasts of what we do, but, you know, the similar, you know, bros talking whatever thing. But they will do extremely niche and specific subjects and topics, and they put in a lot of work, and they do the whole thing, and part of me, I mean, it is a beautiful thing to see art being created. I mean, if you want to call it art being created with no financial.
Yeah, no, I kind of agree.
Unless there is like a real delusion of like, this is going to get my foot in the door and, you know, Tim Heidecker is going to see this and I'm going to intern at Adult Swim and then I'm going to, straight to Sundance I go. I think it's, you got to start somewhere. And if your goal is, you know, notice me king, but the king has less followers than you do.
What I'm saying is the notice me king in this case is like a guy who probably has 300 followers on Instagram and two kids and lives in Tallahassee, Florida. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. It's such a strange niche thing that I stumbled on, and I just couldn't, I don't know, I just couldn't believe it. I was just like, wow, this is like...
Yeah, I guess part of me wonders if I was a youngster at that, you know, right now, if I would be doing the same thing, you know, like when I was whatever in high school or something, I was making zines that were very niche, and it was, you know,
totally
100 people maybe read it total, and you know, it was all just into the ether. But if I, you know, if I had all the technology nowadays to record video and audio and
do the whole thing,
CGI and what, do the whole thing, is this the type of shit that I would be doing? And do I have anyone in my life that grabs you by the collars and gives you a good shake?
I was like, don't, you got to stop. Go get a job. But I mean, I watched the video and it was great. So shout out to Kaz.
Okay.
Yeah. Shout out to Kaz. But I mean,
shout out to Kaz. I hope you have a trust fund or something. I guess if you're in North Florida, you don't, but
I'm just guessing based on your general location. All right. Well, we're back in America. We're back to regularly scheduled How Long Gone programming. We have a guest today, the legendary Stuart Copeland, the drummer from the band The Police that you guys are all familiar with. And mm-hmm. It's interesting because he's English but has no accent, which kind of, if I were him, I'd be kind of bummed. That's the coolest part about being English, I feel like. But that's whatever. That's a different story.
Did he, maybe he did have one at some point and then lost it in some type of accident?
I think the accident, or maybe he yeah, is getting too rich and living in California.
Yeah, his mistake was getting a house in Kauai and just kind of like vibing. Yeah, I mean, widely known as one of the greatest drummers of all time, dead or alive. You know, he is a goated stick man.
And this
as well as a cymbal man.
The sticks are Promark 5A's, actually. They just have a nice, you know, they just have a nice feel.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to get his opinion on drummers who wear gloves, because that seems like some real pussy shit to me. But I want to hear it from a real source.
So we have a lot of good kind of hard-hitting musical questions planned.
Yeah, you can talk about how he warms up and his kind of scales if you want to, but I'm going to stick to the good stuff.
Also, he spells his name the right way. Much to talk about here with the C-Man.
All right. Let's give Stuart a jingle. Hey, Jason. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on. You're eating at restaurants you don't want to eat at all the time to appease myself and others.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't go back to that one doctor who used your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines, their family group chat, their crossword puzzles, just because they're available right now or because they take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. And you can search by location, availability, and insurance, so literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know.
ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors very close to you and instantly book appointments with them online. Just like when I'm looking for new shoes on my sites, you can filter specifically, see which doctors take your insurance, located near you, maybe find a doctor that's far away from you for personal reasons you don't want to disclose.
I use ZocDoc, and you should too.
Go to ZocDoc.com/howlong and download ZocDoc for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/howlong. ZocDoc.com/howlong.
Stuart, thank you for joining us here on How Long Gone. Are you coming to us from your percussion cavern?
I'm coming to you from the Sacred Grove, which is a form of percussion cavern.
Okay.
So the sacred Grove? Is that like an Epstein thing?
Yeah. I don't know what the Epstein thing is. it's where my fancy friends come to play. I got the largest collection, the world's largest collection of the cheapest instruments money can buy. I got trombone.
Okay.
I got cello. I got timpani. I got trumpet. I got all kinds of shit you can bang, of course. I got huge, big amplifiers over there. I got guitar. And my buddies come over here and jam.
Damn.
And I got cameras around the room, too.
Just in case? Or is this for YouTube?
well, it's just for jams. And I put it, I come in, you know, suffering through my hangover next morning. I cut them up and I put clips up on YouTube. Check it out. On YouTube, look for Snoop Dogg at the Sacred Grove.
Okay.
Neil Peart at the Sacred Grove, or, you know.
A legend.
Yeah.
I like this because you're describing something that, like, a lot of dads do, and they have a room where they jam with their friends and get drunk.
Absolutely.
But your friends are just a little, different than, like, other dads.
It's like a giant train set. It's how I screw around. I put on some, some Jimi Hendrix, and I go and I fix the wiring and I hide all the wiring because there's no engineer in here. You know, my buddies come over and I just hit record. There's a template. Mm. Everything's in record. Everything's mic'd up.
Yeah, yeah.
And in record, and I got cameras. And so it's pretty sophisticated, but doesn't look like a recording studio. There's no engineer looking bored. Mm-hmm. And so my chuckle buddies come over here.
Sure.
We rock out. Of course, I have to cut it down. We rock out all night, and then I cut it down to like a manageable, 2 hours.
Well, how long,
2 hours?
How long are you playing for when the fellas come over? How much Casamigos can you drink?
Well, when it comes to Danny Carey, a lot.
That is so. You're saying you're jamming for hours with the fellas in here?
Well, yeah, we jam for hours, and then the next morning I cut it down to like 5 minutes or something like that.
That's nice. You know? That's good of you. Palatable. Only the best parts. Only palatable. The best part.
Well, here what I do, you see, since I got cameras, I don't have a cameraman. The cameras don't move. I discovered something that no director is even aware of because directors have professional camera guys who do this. They move around. They zoom in.
Of course.
They zoom out. Mm-hmm. But my cameras are locked, which means that when we do the playback, and every musician loves the playback. Hey, guys, want to hear what we just did? Yeah.
Of course. We're geniuses. We're all geniuses.
When we do the playback, I hand them a trombone or a tuba or a cello or whatever and say, okay, take a solo. And since they're all musicians, they can air saxophone real good, and they can't find the notes, but they can
look like they know what they're doing.
A couple things about that. First of all, Snoop was on the drums. Now he's standing over here, and I can just carve this part of the screen there, and then overlay that part of the screen. So now I got two Dannys, two Snoops, two Ben Harpers, two Stanley Clarks, whatever. And so I've got multiple jam sessions with people on different instruments. And the other part is that after Danny Carey has taken a baritone sax solo, not knowing how to hit any notes, but knowing which notes he would be hitting.
Sure.
I go with MIDI and I figure out what notes he would have hit if he knew how to find them.
What?
And I create a part that he would have played.
Damn, this is a gift to the homies.
This is how much free time. I don't actually have this much free time.
What is your Adderall prescription, sir?
Really? Then, and this is the best part, I get out that baritone sax. I can play like three notes. I think, burr, burr, and I find the notes that I found on MIDI. It's a burr, no, burr, okay. I record two or three notes, and I can build with an actual baritone sax that solo that Danny would have played. Check it out. Sacred Grove.
Okay, so this is beyond a hobby. This sounds like another full-time job.
Well,
or do you enjoy it so much that you don't look at it that
that's
way?
That's why I don't do so much of it anymore.
Mm. You go through phases because it's so time-consuming.
Yeah. And I've got a whole bunch of jams backed up to cut. And it takes me maybe a week or two.
So you got a lot of footage in the can.
Yeah, baby, I do.
So did you teach yourself to edit video for specifically for this purpose?
No, I've been cutting videos since they invented computers.
Okay. I
maybe before.
Which was before you were born, youngster.
Early adopter.
Were you even born then?
I look very young, but I'm 40, so I don't know. What
like I said, you're a baby.
What year? I don't know when the personal computer was invented. I'm sorry, I should know.
I am 70. I have sons older than you.
Okay. I knew that you had a bunch of kids.
I eat pieces of shit like you for breakfast.
Yeah, that's the vibe. Is this room that we're in, is this in your house or is this off site?
This is in the garden.
Oh, it's in the garden. Oh, that's the, oh, hence the name. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Fuck it. Let's take a tour. There's the drums.
Okay. So you,
there's the drums. There's the percussion. There's the big ass amplifiers. But there's a piano, got their Hammond organ, got all your kinds of cool shit to bang. I got my timpani. I got the big gong here.
You gotta have a gong. What kind of percussionist wouldn't have
a gong?
Hang
on, I'm gonna have to go. I gotta go shut that motherfucker up. Hang on.
We're gonna go shut this motherfucker up. Looks like, Chris, we see a lot of kind of ceremonial tribal masks hanging on the walls. Do you think maybe the stew man kind of puts those on?
Yeah. They have a very, very important ritual function here. You know, I get my guys out of here after we've played all the music. We put on the mask, strip down, and get really weird.
Sure. No, the mask can only hide tribal. So much, you know, at a certain time.
Well, you see, as I discovered through Clark Kent, as Clark Kent used to say, the mask reveals the true identity.
Mm. So you're subscribed. You're out here. This is I'm very impressed with this room. It feels like it's taken years to kind of dial in, and you're still adding to it, I imagine. But do you ever take anything out?
I don't throw anything away.
I can tell. I could kind of tell, but I didn't know if that was.
I've got everything. In fact, I got a book coming out. Now that we get to the plug of my diaries from 1976, 77, 78, when we were starving, I've got everything. Like I say, I don't throw anything away.
Have you always been like this? And it's just now it's coming to roost?
No, I've been like this. Well, I was like this back when I was 25. I kept the my notes, how much we got paid, how many attended,
really,
you know, whether how well we played, how much the truck, because I was chief roadie and tour, I was band manager,
of course.
I had to book the trucks, book the PA, pay off the roadies, go get the money from the club owner, so I got all those notes, including my dodgy accounts, and my arithmetic was not that great, as I discovered now.
At least someone's doing it. Okay, so...
Well, Sting was busy with dense literature and writing songs.
Bro, can you stop writing songs for a second? I'm having some trouble with some simple multiplication. If you could help me out.
If he's not writing, he's shagging, right?
Yeah.
I didn't.
That was a good... I was happy. I'll book the trucks. You go write us another hit.
Yeah, it's a nice division of labor.
Actually, to be quite accurate, this was before he started writing hits. We stuck together, Sting and I, for like a year and a half with a crap guitar.
With no hits?
I won't say that. With a limited guitar and my crap songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Three chord tricks, which are designed, you know, they were punk songs because we were supposed to be a punk band. And somehow Sting, with all of his musical depth and commitment, stuck it out. We just had a groove going until he didn't really start writing songs until Andy joined. And when Andy joined, suddenly all this gold came out of the ground. None of us had any idea that he could write songs like that. But when Andy, you know, but he learned from the punk scene how to strip it down.
Mm-hmm.
Verse, chorus, bridge, verse, chorus, you're done. And so he learned that economy of composition. Mm-hmm. And when Andy joined, with that harmonic sophistication, then Stingo really suddenly out of nowhere blossomed as this incredible songwriter. After we stuck together, God knows why, for a year and a half. And then Andy also joined. When Andy joined, we were still a starving fake punk band. And I asked Andy what he was thinking when he insisted on joining the band. Dude, what were you thinking? And he says, I don't know. I should have stuck with Neil Sedaka. Because he was like a triple scale guy.
Yeah, no, I mean, I did want to ask you about this because Jason and I are obviously, we're in business together. We spend a lot of time together. We do shows. We travel together. Are there any tips on kind of staying friends and making sure it's still fun that you could give us after all these years?
Other than making millions of dollars?
Yeah.
Millions of dollars actually complicates things.
Damn. Okay.
One bit of advice. Don't let that complicate things.
Yeah.
We don't have that problem yet, but we're working on that.
The best part is to stay friends somehow. Somehow don't take it personally. Mm-hmm. Although that's hard in a band, I don't need to tell you guys that in a band, just everything is, all your relationships are amplified the way they are in a family, but even more so because it's your livelihood.
Yeah.
And you're an adult now. You're not just a child. You're an adult, a grown human. And so that tightness of that relationship, that interdependence, that being stuck in each other's pockets makes it kind of tough. But you know, the police was hard. The police was, we were not easy on each other, particularly in the later years. It was a very harsh environment. We're proud of the result of that clash.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't easy at the time.
Yeah, of course.
And it was a real surprise to me to meet bands like Rush. They all get along great. They go to movies, hang out together. Hey, Neil, what you doing? A fish. They hang out together, you know.
They actually want to spend time with each other, which is an insane thought.
Yeah,
after being on tour. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
30 years with each other.
But do you think that the one thing I'll say that strikes me about bands in particular is I feel like once everybody has a family, does that kind of help things a little bit?
No.
If everybody gets along, it makes it worse. Okay, just wanted to, okay, that's clear.
No, it's important, you know, for a human being. Family is much more important, and in fact, you know, a family can back you up when you come home from work and dealing with those bastards. You get home and there's a loving family there that can build you back up again. And
I'm sorry, Sting said that today, honey. Can I get a little foot rub?
Exactly. Yeah. I bet. Oh, that nasty old Stingo. Mm-hmm. Actually, the wives got together and conspired against us. The three wives were much tighter than the three guys.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. I feel like alliances can be formed, you know, that are outside of your control once there's wives and kids.
What did the three wives do with their sort of combined power? How do they wield this witchcraft?
In mysterious ways.
So you still don't even know all the things that they've done.
Well, actually, I just know that when the wives are around, everybody behaves better.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. No, that goes without saying. That goes without saying. But yeah, these diaries, the notes and stuff is kind of insane because, like I said, I think like young people usually aren't thinking about that, especially during this time. But is it... when you look back on it, is it like informative? Were you hard on yourself, or was it pretty like, were the critiques reasonable?
No, I absolutely was hard on myself. And I gave myself, I gave us and I gave myself bad reviews. I noticed it was a way of kind of, I'm feeling guilty. I fucked that up, you know, and I could make myself feel better by just putting it on the page. It was very therapeutic, actually. It was because I had my notes, which was the facts and figures, but I had another book where I would just write, you know, for just my innermost feelings, for grievance nurturing, those bastards, or joy, exaltation, aha, Clark Kent hit, haha, I'm conquering the world, you know, the kind of stuff you don't want anybody to read. I put it in the book.
Sure,
but
you
got to tell somebody.
Thank God for editors.
It's more of a coffee table. It's not like a
book.
It's a coffee table book. It has a lot of words in it that I wrote both back then and my commentary now. But it's also a lot of pictures.
I like that.
And cool stuff to look at,
too. My book does have a lot of words in it, so you go pick that up, you know, just check that out.
but don't let that put you off. No. You know, don't be dissuaded by a few words, you know.
Stuart, it feels like kind of a book version of Everyone Stares, the documentary that you made.
Absolutely. And it goes right up to the point where the film picks up when I got a movie camera. Mm-hmm. In 1978, and we were just beginning to, well, I could afford a movie camera, a Super 8 camera. Mm-hmm. So we were just beginning to have some disposable income. Well, the book goes right up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And because the fun part of the story of any band is the struggling part. After that point, it's kind of repetitive. you know, one stadium is after another.
another stadium.
You know, it's just album tour, album tour. But the interesting part was when we were starving.
Yeah,
we were on our hands and knees.
When you were sort of masquerading as a punk band, who were you trying to sound like?
Well, as much like a combination of the Sex Pistols, the Damned, and the Clash.
Okay.
And every other band in London had the identical E, A, and D chords.
Mm-hmm.
You know, interestingly, the music was not revolutionary at all. The message, the attitude, the hairdo were all revolutionary. But the music was E, A, and D chords through a Marshall amp with a backbeat on the drums.
Uh-huh.
Nothing.
No, that's true.
And a little faster. Okay.
We'll pick it up a little bit.
But when you were doing that, how much of your like drum style was going on, or were you just kind of playing a straightaway backbeat, or were you adding some of your flavor?
Oh, no, I was making shit. I was doing the thing is that, you know, even before Andy joined, Sting and I could eat anybody's lunch in London.
Mm-hmm.
They all knew it. They, you know, the Pistols and the Damned, you know, Brian James and that, you know, Ratskin, they all came to our shows to pick up chops because we were 5 years older, had played in professional bands, and we had chops and we did use them. We couldn't get too persnickety with long improvisations back then. When we came to America, we could, because the punk rules, we were able to cast off the very strict rules of punk. And not many people consider that, but punk had very, very strict rules. But we had, you know, we had chops. So we didn't sound, you know, it was more of them copying licks from us than the other way around. What we did cop from them, what we stole from the Pistols and the rest, was the attitude, the look, the scene, that set of clubs, that set of fanzines in that world. We were carpetbaggers and we jumped in there, but we had our own way of using our instruments, which was immediately spotted by the London critics, who spotted us as carpetbaggers right away.
They're like, hold on one second. This guy, these guys are too good. This doesn't make sense.
Well, they knew my history. I'd just come from a prog rock band called Curved Air.
Yes.
And I was very quiet. And I'm bragging about it now because prog is cool now. All right.
Is it?
I'm proud to be prog. I'm out of the closet.
Proud to
I'm
be
sharing
prog.
With you that I was prog.
You're coming out. I'm You're coming, coming out as proud to be prog.
And in fact, I was married to the queen of prog, Sonia Christina. And when I was in Curved Air. So my prog credentials are much better than my punk credentials.
Sure. I didn't realize prog was back. I would love for you, because, you know, we probably have a lot of listeners that don't even know what that genre encompasses.
Okay.
I would love,
let's
what
tell is,
what would you say that, what's the top prog shit of all time? The most recognizable.
Other than Curved Air, of course.
Other than Curved Air, of course. Of course.
Well, Genesis, yes.
Okay.
Rush.
Mm-hmm.
Any band with long songs longer than 5 minutes.
Okay.
Any band with a complex, a lot of noodling, a lot of trips with diddly, 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 diddly.
Mm-hmm.
King Crimson.
Okay.
Big prog. It's that period just before punk. And in fact, it got so noodly and so sophisticated and so elite. That's why the snarly kids on the street don't care about no triplets and no noodly noodly.
Yeah,
they just want to rock out and burn down the building. So that's where the Sex Pistols came in.
I didn't really realize that, but that tracks. That tracks. Because we actually, I heard you say that we actually just did two shows at the 100 Club in London. You guys played there, didn't you?
Oh, what do you know? Yeah. No, we didn't play there, but the Pistols did. That's,
yeah, for sure.
That's about the only club that's still there. And I wonder if it's in the same place. On the, you know, one end of the Oxford Street near Tottenham Court Road.
Yeah, it's in the same place. And it smells the same. Probably look, I don't, there's not a lot of updates.
That's probably, you know what I mean? That's probably my piss you can smell in the bathroom.
that's all me, bro.
Yeah. And it's aged 50 years vintage. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's vintage. It's vinegar now. Where did your accent go? Because you're British, but it's just, it really, I'm not picking up a trace.
Hey, hang on a second. I'm Merkin. I was born in Virginia, USA.
Oh, okay.
I left when I was 2 months old. And went from there to...
That's enough.
I was born in Virginia. And I went to... When I was 2 months old, my daddy was away on business. He was busy installing a dictator over in Cairo, Egypt. and so as soon as I was old enough to travel, I moved, you know, was shipped over to Egypt, Cairo. And after, when I was about 4 or 5, we moved from there to Beirut, Lebanon, which is where I kind of growed up and did my teen years and played in my band at the American Embassy Beach Club and the British Embassy Beach Club and so on. We played Kinks, James Brown, and other stuff. And then when it got hot for my father politically, he shipped the family out and sent me off to darkest Somerset to boarding school in England,
which is where I was
in England for 20 years. And so London was my town. And that's where I busted out with my first bands.
That makes sense.
And no, I'm American.
Okay.
Okay. So when you say when you're saying American and Virginia, this is a little more of the CIA Virginia and a little less of the hillbilly Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
Correct. Okay.
Absolutely. This is a suburb of the CIA, McLean, Virginia.
Okay. Yeah. Even I know that. Okay. Because there's Virginia has many different hills and valleys, as you know.
Yeah. I've got some family in Virginia in Blacksburg.
Yeah.
But Not so CIA-y.
Yeah. Well, Dave Grohl's from Virginia, but like probably the part you're from.
Yeah.
You know, or you're talking about
the commoner's land.
The regular part.
Yeah. He's not really giving. Yeah. He's not giving CIA either, really.
Which is fine.
Strangely enough, I don't. London is, look, I love it, but I don't, I can't deal with the weather. It's too much for me. But everything else about it is A+. It's given me so much as far as culturally what I love. We were just there. It was terrible. But I believe you that it can be great in the summer. But I don't know. I feel like, though, that whole thing contributes to the sound and the music and all of that stuff in a positive way.
I guess so. Maybe you've got to be miserable to be angry, to make angry rock music.
You can't get Joy Division coming out of Florida, right?
Yes, you
could, actually.
No, but you can get the B-52s coming out of Macon, Georgia.
That doesn't make
B-52s are so good.
That doesn't make a lot of sense.
They're not so much angry. They're cheerfully aggressive, I guess. Who is angry? The American band, by the time the new wave or the punk thing got to America, it wasn't angry anymore. It was just alternative. You know, the Talking Heads, Blondie, B-52s, they were not having a hissy fit. They were not so much angry. It's just fresh, new, young, vibrant, loud, cool.
Yeah.
And non-prog. Back to the basics.
The main thing is to not be prog, and then you can be punk.
That was the thing. But now I am prog. And it was all, you know, the main thing about the punk revolution, 1977-78, the big revolution was all about the hairdo.
Mm-hmm. How bad did your hair look?
Pretty prog. And okay.
What do you mean?
Well, the day Andy Summers cut his hair to join a fake punk band, he had not yet traded in all of his bell-bottom jeans, which was noticed by the critics of London.
So he had the right haircut, but he had the wrong jeans.
Yeah, but the haircut, that meant he was instantly disowned by all of his friends. And me too. You know, when I got cut my, you know, that there's that Crosby, Stills, and Nash thing. Almost cut my hair today. Well, I did. And I did to fit into, it was a new uniform to fit into this new scene with not only very stringent music rules, but also very stringent rules regarding your look. You know, you could not be cool and hip and punk and hold on to your long hair.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, that's hippie shit.
There's no wiggle room.
You can't get past
it. Stuart, could you walk me through what the prog groupies are like?
Yeah.
Much better than the punk groupies.
Oh, really?
Cleaner.
Really?
Cleaner. They shower daily instead of weekly?
Yeah.
What part of the world is your home and studio in, Stuart? Did you already mention that?
I'm in California.
In California.
In Southern California, in Los Angeles, Brentwood.
Brentwood. Oh, okay.
What are we doing? How often are we going to the Country Mart?
Brentwood?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably run into you over there.
Okay.
What, Farm Shop?
Yeah, Farm Shop. I try to go every Saturday for lunch if I can, but it's so busy.
I used to do Friday breakfast there. I meet a certain chuckle buddy of mine. We meet but it's too crowded with people I know. And so, hey, I don't want to see anybody in breakfast. I'll see you for lunch. But at breakfast,
that's a good policy. Breakfast is too far. Lunch is fine.
And I ain't telling you where I go for Friday breakfast now.
No, you don't want to blow the spot up. That's fine.
We'll figure it out. When you say chuckle buddy, Stuart, that's just a friend of yours that makes you laugh, or is this something deeper?
Making me laugh is pretty deep. I read an article somewhere that the secret to longevity is friends. And so I have friends, and we all realize that we're good for each other's health.
Yeah.
And our simple-minded banter is actually our version of Zen. And there's a few, and also I meet up with, you know, my buddies on the bike path. Every Sunday morning we're on the bike path talking bullshit, crackpot theories, get-rich-quick schemes, and other important communications.
And when you say bike path, is that a literal bicycle path, or is this a metaphor for something?
No, it is both a literal path, and it is also a metaphor.
Okay.
The path
okay,
of life, the path of destiny.
Yes.
And we stay on our right side of the path, and we return on the other side of the path, and we go and have a huge breakfast, so it's a calorie-neutral endeavor.
I like calorie-neutral activities with the fellas. That's something, Jason, we should look into that.
Yeah, you go and you have that pancake breakfast with waffles and everything. Then you get back on the bike and you burn it all off.
Sure.
Works great.
And where do you get that breakfast at again, sir?
The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, And that's with Babbel. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off your list with Babbel.
Chris and I are going to the country of Georgia in a month or so, and they have a very unique language. And I will be using Babbel to try and just get a little bit of action so I can know how to order my cold brew lattes and things like that in a way that's actually science-based. Don't spend hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Use Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons. They're handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new lingo in as little as 3 weeks.
Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/howlong. Get 55% off at babbel.com/howlong, spelled B-A-B-B-E-L. .com/howlong. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Babel.
We meet up at Shutters and end up at Venice Beach, and that's about it.
It's not a bad little vibe.
Okay.
But it's very beneficial for the muscles here. The laughter is, you know, that's probably the most, because it's flat.
The obliques.
And we don't go fast.
Mm-hmm. Are you wearing all the spandex and shit? You got all the gear on?
No.
No?
Good man.
But whenever we run into a new buddy, you know, like that, hey, come on now, join us on the bike path. You know, do bring your spandex. And they show up in the spandex and we laugh at them, which is our form of hazing.
That's a pretty nice.
And then we never see the spandex again.
That's a pretty nice kind of clean old school hazing. You know, that's nice. No one's getting hurt. It's not too mean.
Yeah, people my age showing up in spandex. That's a good laugh for our minds.
That's a good laugh for everybody.
There's no pain involved, only humiliation, which is kind of friends I have. A little humiliation is not a bad thing.
Maybe a little pain in the groin area, depending on how long that ride is. When you're having these jam sessions with your friends, what is the I guess the drug of choice when you guys are exploring and expanding your minds?
Well, I have sober parties.
Okay.
And by day, and I have not sober parties by evening. Okay. And I will pretty old school, the usual forms of abuse, which I actually am kind of not quite as participatory these days. But some, you know, I have some of the younger musicians, you know, in their 50s.
Young guys, young whippersnappers.
I ain't naming any names now about which parties are which.
Don't do it. Okay, so we're not drinking as much as alcohol as we used to, and maybe having a little gummy and getting in the pocket for a while, that kind of vibe. Nothing crazy?
A little crazier than that.
Okay, a little crazier than that. There we go. Good answer.
Great answer.
There's one of my videos there where I'm cutting this video, and in this room here, there's a kind of a counter there where we all lean over. It's like the bar where this is designed to be, you know, when bands run into each other at the Four Seasons, you know, we run into, I don't know, Bon Jovi. You know, whether we've got anything in common culturally, it's great to meet the band, the bar. Hey, we get talking, and they're good guys. And God, I wish we had somewhere we could go jam. This is that place. And anyway, so we're jamming away.
I know a place.
And I'm cutting the video, and this countertop is kind of visible with all the bad stuff in there that we don't want the children to see.
Uh-oh.
And so I did have one shot. I always get a clean shot of the empty studio for that reason, so that I can, with my masking, I can, when it shows that table, I can cut the clean version of the table in there. But I left it in there in one of the videos, and you'll just have to watch them all to find this shot where you could see
I'm sure the commenters let you know.
Yeah, all the stuff disappears.
Okay. So Bon Jovi does counter drugs. Got it. Okay.
I guess to play music for that long, I've always been impressed by the way that some musicians historically can go on stage and just be completely inebriated and fucking nail it. It blows my mind. It's like they're wired differently.
I tried that.
You can't do that.
Very early in my career, I discovered that hanging out and jamming and having goofing off is fine, but in front of a paying audience, no.
Yeah.
I wish it did work, but it just doesn't.
I tried every which way to make it work.
Sure, I'm sure you did. What.
I even tried playing reggae. It didn't even work for reggae. I know. That's sad.
That is crazy.
People talk about kind of like bar sports, billiards, darts, and things like that, where having the perfect amount of alcohol or pot or whatever in your system.
Any boring, stupid game into fun, I guess. I've never been a big fan of billiards or darts.
Boring shit.
What I do like is Chinese billiards. And I don't know if that's, I mean that in a very nice way, because I love going to China. Uh-huh. And it's only, and this is the only form of billiards that I like is the Chinese kind. So I'm
kind of snooker meets mahjong kind of feel.
Well, what you have is the white ball, mm-hmm. and everybody has a turn. And you have to be at one end. When it's your turn, you have to be at one end or the other. And you can grab any one of the balls and throw it at the white ball. And you have to keep that white ball moving. If the white ball goes in the pocket or if it slows down and stops, you're out. And so everybody's running around the table, grabbing a ball and throwing it the other, you know, it's
you're not using a cue. It's with your hand. It's with your hand.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. This is a contact sport.
Okay, so Chinese billiards is something that you invented personally while fucked up is what it sounds like.
I don't know where it came from.
Who even knows?
Stuart, you have a lot of hobbies. It's impressive. I feel like you really have, your days are filled. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It sounds like I'm doing a lot of hobbies at the same time, but it's usually one hobby at a time.
Sure, sure. I just feel like you've kind of like, yeah, you got your plate is full, and that seems like it's by choice. But you also have all these kids and like grandkids and all that shit too. So
seven kids. I got seven kids, five grandkids, and four grand puppies.
Okay, grand puppies don't count, but I like that. I like that.
They totally count.
They might be the ones you like the most. They might.
No, those grand puppies love their grand dog.
Okay. All right. That's it. All right. That's me. We're out. You're a human being, Stuart. You're a human being. Don't do that. You're a human being.
Well, the grand, when he hangs out with the grand puppies, they're not staring at an iPad all day, right? Like those humans.
No, those human grandchildren. Yeah, but I love the human grandchildren. They're great. Cool. They're much better than the children. In fact, if I'd known how much fun the grandchildren are going to be, I'd have had them first. The grandchildren are great. I just pour candy down them. I bribe them to win their love.
Of course.
And I really enjoy the grandkids.
Now, did your kid growing up? Did your kids think it was cool that you were in a band, or were they like, "Dad's so annoying"?
Most of the kids grew up in between.
Oh
yeah. One of them was old enough to be like a teenager back in the day. The others were too young. And when we did the reunion tour in 2007, my girls, I had four boys and then three girls, the boys were all into it. They loved it. The girls, who were 9, 7, and 4, they were intimidated by it. They didn't like it. They didn't like, you know, my job as dad at home is to tell dumb dad jokes and hang out and be, you know, just Mr. Casual Dad. That's my job at home. And to see me up on the big stage with all the attention, all the noise, and all the, you know, the fan thing, freaked them out. You know, back off, everybody. He's my daddy.
It's my dad. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's cute. Yeah. It's sweet.
But okay, now those girls have grown up. Dad, come on, do another reunion tour. Now they're in their 20s.
Yeah, they're like, it'd be really... I think that I need you to... correct my history if I'm wrong, but I believe I was at the last show at Madison Square Garden, because I don't know if Sting left the stage and got shaved backstage.
Oh yeah, that's the
on
one.
On the jumbo.
Yeah, it took longer than anyone thought. Yeah, that almost killed the show.
I was
going to
say, so Jason,
dude, you look fine. Come on back out.
They finish, and before the encore, Sting leaves the stage, and he gets into like a barber's chair, and they're showing it on the Jumbotron.
The shitty beard.
You're right. But you're right, Stuart. It took like 12 minutes, and it was kind of like, guys, we got to come on.
Guys, we got some momentum going here. We had a great show. It was going fantastic. We had the NYPD came out with a drumline band.
Yeah.
We had Elvis Costello guys came out and jammed. We had a great show going. Mm-hmm. The B-52s played that night. It was just a really great night.
No, it was
Madison
fun.
Square Garden.
It was really fun.
And then we had to hold on all for his damn shave. But let me tell you the other side of that story, though.
Please.
He earned that 12-minute shave because one of the big breakthroughs of our band career was the first time we played Madison Square Garden. It was our first arena. And it's a big jump for a band going from the clubs to bigger clubs to small theaters to bigger theaters, but the jump from the theater of maybe the biggest are like 3,000-4,000 up to 18,000 is a very big jump. And it's, you know, bands are nervous about the first time they do that, which we were. Of course, we were lucky. The tickets sold out real quick. And there we are on that big stage, which has a very different sound from a club or a theater. It's just everything's further away. The audience is further away. You got all this air around you. I actually like that sound. I think most musicians, that's their favorite sound, is the arena.
Really?
As opposed to the stadium is kind of too outdoors. You know, arena's just perfect.
Okay.
But we were kind of uncomfortable there in New York City, and it's like our first arena, and like this is a different environment. And then just to cap it all off, the worst thing possible happened. My bass drum skin broke.
What?
Now, you break a tom-tom skin, great. Whip it out, turn it over, put another in snare drum, pull it out, put in another one.
Yeah, yeah.
No problem. The bass drum, you got to pull out all the mic stands. You got to pull out all the cymbal stands. You got to pull out all the tom-toms. You got to pull out everything.
I've never heard of this breaking. I've never heard. Were you going that hard?
I guess. I was excited.
When does he not go hard?
Sure. I broke my snare drum twice in the Hall of Fame. The kick. Okay, so the kick goes, that's a big disaster. Oh, damn. Fortunately, we got a professional on the mic. Sting learned his craft, you know, working the cruise liners, and knows how to work an audience. That's why I've got this big house here.
God bless him.
And so he's on the mic, and he's going, hey, and we got Danny Quattrucci. He's pulling the thing, and he does a running commentary of the whole deal. And so the crew are running around, like, you know, pulling the wires. Then they reassemble the thing. Okay, guys, are we ready to go? We're ready to go. Okay, let's rock. And New York City was ours in that moment, because it seemed like a big disaster, but by the time we kicked back in,
it worked.
The building was in flames. So cut to 30 years later, and Sting's having a fucking shave. It's okay, dude.
Okay. 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 I see. Damn. That's fair. That's fair. That's funny. That's really funny. I remembered that when we were, I just was like, I wonder if that was like a discussion that was had beforehand. How, you know, if anybody had any,
no.
Okay. It didn't feel like it, but I didn't know, you know, you guys are professionals.
Well, there used to be a thing in the intermission. There used to be a dressing room with food, and they would do like a party where they would, you know, and I was busy taking a leak. It was sort of like the intermission party. Instead of doing all that, he sat down in a chair and got a shave, which was kind of less photogenic.
Yes.
Less.
Yeah, yeah.
Less inclusive.
It was a big beard, too. So it took, that's what I'm saying. You have to trim it first, then shave it. Can't just, you know.
Yeah, a guy grows a lot of hair.
Sure. I'm sure what he's known for.
Stuart, have you ever peed while on stage drumming?
No.
No?
Well, do I need to think about that for a minute? No. I think I'd remember.
Well, at the height, at the longest, what was the set looking like? Like 2 hours?
Yeah, 2 hours. I mean, these bands who go out there, you know, love Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift, I don't know any of her music, but I love her. That shot of her playing in the rain, that's the deal. She's the real thing. I don't care.
I think she did 5 hours recently. I think she literally did something crazy. It's getting insane.
Ms. Swift, please, young lady, cut it out. Okay, you're making the rest of us look bad.
Look bad.
Okay.
I think it's
I can only stand my favorite bands. I can only stand three songs anyway.
Oh, me
I
got too. A short attention span. My man, I'm right there with you.
I mean, the best band in the world. I'm good for three songs, and it's a drag when they're friends of mine, and I have to stick it out. But
especially if they're playing a venue where they don't have chairs, that's a tough one too, right?
Oh my God, and Fish as well. I love those guys. Come on, man, 4 hours.
Jeez. It's too much.
They once did a 14-hour show. God knows what they were doing. They were playing the entire, or God knows, they had some concept. Then they had porta cabin, you know, portaloos on the stage. And at one point, they're all sober now, but so I can talk out of school about their bad old days, which was part of their look. And you know, one by one, they're sneaking off to take a little break. And at one point, they're all in there taking the break, and they're going, wait a minute, you're in here. I'm in here. Who's on stage?
Who's flying this plane?
Shit, bro. Hurry up. Get out there.
John Mayer can only do so much.
Yeah.
You can't have the auxiliary keyboard player carrying the whole thing.
It was the keyboard. You nailed it. It was Paige.
That's actually really funny.
He's working overtime.
Yeah, but I think that these it's just gotten so long. I guess that like it feels like it has to do with ticket price and like Taylor Swift has to charge too much and she feels guilty, so she plays for as long as she can.
I would reward the audience. If they paid that much money, I would give them a couple hours off for good behavior.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the reward is just play the hits for an hour and a half and let me get out of here.
Yeah, really.
Her is every song is a hit. Every song is a
yeah.
Now it's time to cry.
Yeah, what is she, like 23 and she's got 50 hits already?
It is though. Jason, you're absolutely right, where it's like, I can't go to the bathroom the whole time because I might miss my favorite song because they're all my favorite song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's no... Yeah.
Now, Paul McCartney's got that together. You can take a leak during Paul McCartney because he insists. You know, I get his point of view, but he insists on playing like new songs.
Yeah.
He doesn't just want to play all the Beatles. You know, rather than do that all night, he and like they hit the big songs. And, oh my God, it's incredible. And then... Because I guess he's even older than me, and he has sympathy for those who need a bathroom break. Sure. So play one of his new songs. And the Rolling Stones have the same thing with the Keith Richards set.
Yes, yes.
Well, actually, it's not just so the people take a leak; it's so that they can do some merch.
Yes, exactly. It's all the.
That's when they sell all the merch.
When Keith Richards starts singing, everybody's taking out their credit cards, walking over to the merch, walking over to the merch.
I'm partial to Keith Richards.
I guess I can
singing.
Get another beer.
I kind of like Keith Richards singing.
I like it when it's like part of a Rolling Stones song, you know, when it's like a little bit of a, it's like a sprinkle. I don't need like a solo album.
Though. Like Stewart singing on a Police song. You're not singing the whole thing, but you're adding a nice little garlic salt on that steak, aren't you?
A little pepper.
You don't want to hear too much of that.
I mean, because I remember when I saw it, the drum set that you're playing on at this point, when I saw you, is it's almost... In the round, right? Like it's almost like a 360.
No, that's your Neil. No, not quite Neil Peart level. Mm-hmm. Neil Peart needed a trap door to get into his drums.
But you had, I feel like you had some weird shit off to the side. It's a lot of
too
drums.
Many,
it's a lot of instruments.
You know, I had an interesting experience one time where I got a call out of the blue from George Martin, the famous producer of the Beatles, who wrote all that orchestral music.
Of course.
And he was doing a show at the Bowl in LA where he had the LA Phil. And they're doing all the orchestral stuff of Beatles songs. And for some reason, he called me to play drums. And he got all these musicians to play these Beatles songs. But mainly, it was all about the orchestra.
Ringo wasn't around?
I don't know. Didn't take his call. Who knows? Anyhow, I took the call. And so I showed up. And I figured, if I'm going to be Ringo, I'll play on Ringo's set. One tom-tom in the front, one tom-tom down here. Two cymbals and a hi-hat. And I discovered something. Playing drums is really a lot more fun without all those fucking drums in the way. And you just get down on the groove and wow, I get it. I get that. You know, that's why
the philosophy of Ringo. I mean, he's so interesting.
Yeah, that's why Brad Wilk kicks ass on just one in the front, one on the side. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot more fun. But I do get into the persnickety shit for which I need more toys.
Well, I was about to say, it didn't change your life. You still went back to your big boy.
Yeah. But as you've gotten older, did that change? I think a lot of people, like once you get older, you kind of go more back to basics.
Yeah. A little bit.
Do the most with the less, or are you still, you're still gathering toys?
I used to have three tom-toms at the front. Now I've got two. I used to have octobands, which I don't really bother with anymore.
So this is growth,
but I got a little baby Latin snare, which is a snare drum this big. Bah, bah. You know, I got new toys. I go through fads like everybody else.
Sure. You switch it up, but yeah, the size of the drum set is very interesting to me because I feel like at one point it was a little bit of like a unspoken kind of dick measuring contest among your ilk. Is that
no?
What are you talking about?
When I was before I was a professional musician, it was. And I would look up and I would see Ginger Baker's double bass drum kit. And then I would see Mitch Mitchell's single bass. And I'd go, come on, Mitch. Catch up.
You know, yeah.
Step up.
Yeah.
And then finally he did get a double bass drum kit and I was relieved.
Oh, thank God.
Maybe it is for some, but no, I don't think so. I think maybe amplifiers, because guitarists need that.
Oh, sure. It's the bigger the amp. Yeah. I see what you're saying. It's not like more accessories.
And when it comes to my guitar playing, I'm one of them. I need the big double Marshall stack, you know, make me feel like a man.
No, of course.
I get it. I totally get it.
The amount of money the Marshall Corporation has made off guitar players needing to feel like men is kind of part of their whole business plan, whether they realize it or not.
Well, one of my favorite images is of Jimi Hendrix in Hawaii, where he's got three Marshall stacks.
Mm-hmm.
I just look at that and drool. But of course, you know, the professional in me now has learned he probably only had one cabinet plugged in.
Yeah, that's,
right.
Yeah,
only one of them is mic'd up, and the rest are just plywood.
They look good, though.
Back in the day, I used to be a roadie, and I roadied for Wishbone Ash and for other bands. And one band that we supported a lot was Deep Purple. And the guitar hero of the band was Richie Blackmore.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a row of Marshalls. And the last Marshall looked kind of different from all the others. Well, that's the one they set fire to every night.
Oh, it, damn. So it was just like a stunt cabinet that gets set fire every night?
Yeah, and he would do this thing. He'd lean back into them, and the crew were behind there holding them up while he's trying to push them over. And then it's show business.
It works.
It's show business. Do you go to a lot of shows now in LA? Do you go to the bowl and go do the whole thing?
Yeah, buddies are playing, yeah. And I'm not going to mention any names, but I got some buddies. Every time they play, I got to go see them. And normally I can slip out, you know, soon, unless their wives are there and their wives are buddies with my wife. And
mm-hmm.
I can't slip out because, you know. Yeah.
Next thing you know, you're on your fourth bottle of Pinot Grigio.
Yeah,
it's tough.
No, but my favorite place in the whole world for music is the Forum, the LA Forum.
Oh, really?
Although that new place, the SoFi, has got some nice backstage action, but the LA Forum has the best hang right at the side of the stage. You know, the laminate hang.
Mm-hmm.
Where during the act, all the lawyers and managers are back there talking deals and bragging about how much money they made or ripped off their clients.
Like the Forum Club back in the day was kind of the spot, right?
Oh, well, it still is. In fact, when they redid the Forum, they kicked out all those basketball teams and other bullshit and turned it into a rock venue.
Mm-hmm.
So the backstage is no longer huge breeze block rooms for, you know, 20 guys to take a shower at a time. It's now real slick back there.
Now it's made for 20 guys to do coke every night.
Yeah, much more band friendly backstage at the LA Forum.
I like that the Forum was just like they switched it. They made it for bands. They were we know what this is.
When you play most arenas and stadiums, particularly, you're playing in a sports place, and the dressing rooms are where a baseball team
always a locker room
takes a shower. So after a show, I'm taking a shower. And I'm looking around this huge breeze block shower room, you know, and imagine that I get to win every game. Those poor bastards.
They come in here and lose
games.
And still.
Can you imagine playing a concert and you lose? I can't even conceive of that. We win every game, but that's just the shower. The other part of the dressing room, which is also breeze block and lockers and everything, our crew, and this was the reunion tour, wasn't like this back in the day.
Mm.
Now we have somebody called the dressing room ambiance coordinator.
Yes.
And they come in. There's a whole truck and crew devoted to dressing rooms. And they come in and they call it pipe and drape, where they put pipes around and then they have drape. Then they bring in the furniture and the mood lighting and the lava lamp.
Peloton machine.
Yeah, you got the Peloton.
Oh, yeah. And to create our own boudoir back there.
Oh.
I think it might have been turned into a yoga room instead.
You got to have the yoga.
You see that? You see that? How I slipped that in there?
I did see that. You got to have the yoga instructor on tour, though. That's a classic. Yeah. I mean, you didn't bring your personal trainer on the road?
No, I did not. There were plenty of personal trainers to go around, so I didn't need to bring my.
I'm good.
Don't bring sand to the beach.
I don't need to bring.
And by the way, not many people know this, but our singer, our bass player, is a pretty good coach. He was my yoga instructor.
Talking about Sting?
He's real advanced.
Yeah, he's very advanced.
He's like beyond your hatha. He's into your kundalini, your hatha, your tantric, of course.
Yeah, of course, famously.
I mean, I'm sure he's an amazing instructor.
Yeah, he takes it pretty serious. That's why he's in such good shape. I don't need to do much of that stuff. Just banging shit keeps me in shape.
You do look, I was going to say, you do look good. I got to say, you got a full head of hair. You're thin.
Yeah.
Wiry, you know, I feel like that's a little bit of God's blessing, but also, you know,
banging shit. That's what it is.
You never had a fat phase, right?
No.
I don't see it.
No, I never have.
Yeah, you can tell.
I think you're good. I think you're going to be set for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I think you're good.
I think let you're it fine. Be long.
I think let I, it I be think long. I think you're fine. All right, Stuart, thank you for joining us on How Long Gone today. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, good timing. I'm just about getting hoarse now. We're about out of time.
When does the book come out?
September. That's coming up now.
Very soon.
I got two albums to plug as well, but who cares? Yeah.
Two albums.
There's just quickly. That's why we're here talking after all.
Yeah.
Police Deranged for Orchestra is all your favorite songs where I cut them up, carved them up, switched them around and orchestrated, did the orchestration for a giant orchestral thing. And it's the orchestra version with me banging shit to keep it exciting. And on the mic, we got Three Soul Sisters, and which was kind of a calculated decision on my part. I can't replace Sting with some guy, poor bastard. I wouldn't do that to anybody. But how about Three Soul Sisters? Oh my God, that was like a
whole different ballgame.
Well, as soon as I heard them, I realized something, that this is like the Police sung by the Supremes. It's a fantastic thing. These three women, I've been playing with them for like almost 2 years now. Sold out shows around Europe. It's a really fun show. Okay, made a record.
Sounds a little spiritualized-y in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, then my buddy with whom I won a couple Grammys this year and last year out of Bangalore, he said, how about we do a world version of it? And now the new one is Beyond Borders, and it's like in Tea in the Sahara in Chinese, Every Breath You Take in Zulu, the Soweto Gospel Choir. This is way out there. It's beyond. I sent a couple tracks to Stingo just to imagine him going cross-eyed, and he actually didn't piss him off too bad. He was pretty cheerful about it,
so he signed off on it.
Yeah.
The lawyers were okay.
That's beautiful. Beautiful. Yes. All right, Stuart, we'll look for that stuff, and thank you for joining us. It was a pleasure, and we'll see you soon. I'll see you in Farm Shop.
All right, take care now.
Toodaloo, Stuart.
All right, later, Stuart. Thank you.
Bye.